This episode is brought to you by Visit Ithaca. Ithaca, New York boasts an authentic craft beverage experience, tasty farm-to-table culinary adventures, and scenic outdoor recreation among 150 waterfalls. Plan your trip today with help from visitithaca.com.
This is Jimmy Carboni, the host of Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I've been a part of the HRN community for 10 years. After all that time, I'm constantly inspired by the incredible voices of our network. Each week, I record my show in the HRN studio because I'm excited to bring you, our listeners, the most important stories from the world of beer, food, cider, and more. All of us here at HRN make food radio because we love it. This year, HRN is celebrating its 10th anniversary, but we need your support to keep food radio going strong for the next decade. Join the HRN community today by becoming a member. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate right now. You can even show some love for my show by selecting Beer Sessions in the designation drop-down menu. Thanks for listening to HRN.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll load. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues that send. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm Souther Teague.
And I'm Greg Benson.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, man. How's it going?
It's going well. I just got back from Cleveland yesterday.
I heard.
Great time. Hung out with the team from Porco Lounge. Went all over the city and ate and drank and enjoyed, but the real reason I was there was to scout around and look for spaces, and we're going to open a bar.
Congratulations, man. What's this like?
I think I'm addicted. You're 200 this I think year? I'm addicted to opening bars. We found a space. Just got to make sure that it's zoned right, and then we'll have to do a little bit of light construction, and then we're off and running.
Congratulations,
if things move as quickly as we want them to, we'll be open by Christmas.
Holy shit.
Yeah, that's, I don't like to...
What does that bring the total for 2019 to now?
Hell if I know. if that were to happen and get open by December, then that would be 6 bars in like 18 months, year and a half.
Wow. All part of your grand master plan to move out to Cleveland and just be, you know, a guy sitting on a porch sipping iced tea, right? Living the good life?
Well, my grand master plan is to move to the Caribbean and live on a boat and just have all these places send me checks. But, you know, who knows if that
this is, it's an intermediary step, you know.
This is, you know, not for nothing. A couple of years ago when I was hit by a car, I couldn't work for 6 months, and it really made me do some introspection and some real loose cocktail napkin math. Like, I didn't really sit down with an Excel sheet or anything like that. But I realized Amore Margo, though I love it, isn't going to pay for the kind of retirement I want, which is to live on a boat in the Caribbean. I just, you know, the major cost there is to buy the boat, but then to continue living, right? And I just said, well, how much would it pay for? And I thought, well, about an eighth. So I need 8 of these. So well, it's been my mission science. For the past couple of years to
75% of the way there.
Yes. Yeah, so, you know, it's just been my mission to kind of like crank them out and get them open and work deals and have ownership percentages and see what I can bring to fruition as fast as possible.
Damn, man.
Yeah, man. You turn, you know, I was 47 when I got hit by a car. I'm 49 now. Like, I can't, I'm not a young spry chick like you. What have you been up to this week while I'm out scouting and opening?
Oh, man. Just a lot of work, man. Getting ready for the 4th of July, getting ready for it. You know, yesterday was one of those fun things where you have something that's coming up at you. It's the, you know, obviously the holiday tomorrow. I'm just waiting for Dave Wandrich to come in and ice us.
Oh, God.
In honor.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. Shout out to the regular listeners of our show who got that joke.
Yeah.
But yeah, you kind of, you know, you have that in your sights. Like, okay, like you got to like make it through to this, make it through to this. You totally lose sight of the curveball. So at lunch yesterday, I was just sitting around doing paperwork. All of a sudden, people start flooding in. I'm like, what the fuck is this? Oh, right. The Women's World Cup
huge.
Semifinal.
Man, yeah, every exactly. bar I walked past that had a television was crazy.
And it was amazing. And I love, I mean, I personally love seeing people turn out for women's sports. I think people should do it more. But I was also like, oh, huh, I guess Americans care about soccer, too. How about that?
Right. I mean, we're in a target-rich city. I think we got enough people to support anything, you know?
That's true.
We're lucky.
That's true. What was fun was we even got a few English people in there. So it was a little bit of a fun rivalry. Nothing got too heated because it was the Upper East Side. You know, if it was, you know, if it was Cherry Tavern next door to you, it probably would have come to blows. But for us, it was all very civil.
A civil evening of football
exactly.
At the Rochard. Well, we got a very special guest in the studio today with us, all the way down from Rochester, New York City, Donnie Clutterbuck. Hey, buddy.
All the way from Canada. How's it going today?
Yeah, man. You can smell the maple syrup just over the horizon.
Brought us a whole bottle of it.
Yeah, for the back bar. Donnie, you and I crossed paths, but we didn't actually work together at Booker & Dax several years back now. Gosh,
truth.
The time is really flying
you
by.
You were gone by the time I got there.
I was gone by the time you got there. But you know, you were up there. You came down here kind of just to do some recon and build your own resume, right?
It wasn't even that. I was dating someone at the time who was living here, and I wanted to hang out with her more. And I didn't know that I was only going to be here for a year. I thought it might be 5 or 10, or it could have been a year.
Sure.
You know, there was really no plan, and it just ended up being less time than I thought.
Is that the kind of guy you are? No plan?
Kind of. Yeah, except this trip in
particular
was very...
You don't strike me as that, though. I feel like you're a very organized person.
I am, and I think that's why I don't like to plan, because I don't like them always to change on me. So if you plan too much, then you have to make room for a lot of change, and I don't know. Everything can just change if there isn't a particular way. You know?
And then you plan around that once
right.
it happens.
So this trip, the trip down here, and a few key points are planned, but everything else is kind of like, I don't know, I want to go see the Intrepid. I've never been there before. You know that ship with all the planes on it?
Gorgeous.
Yeah. I've never been to it. But my plan is not to go there at 5 p.m. today. It's to go there before I leave. So loose, undisappointing plans.
Got it.
Yeah. I drove down here to sell a car, actually, in Greenwich, Connecticut, which is the joke about why I'm wearing sunglasses right now and why I was last night. My prescription glasses are in the car.
It's
currently in Greenwich, Connecticut.
So your only prescription glasses are sunglasses.
Yeah, right. So not Booker & Dax.
Buy this car, I'll throw in a free pair of sunglasses.
prescription
yeah,
right.
glasses.
Yeah, there's two of them. So I have two pairs of prescription sunglasses in my bag, but only zero regular glasses. So this is what I look like today until hopefully my friend who I sold the car comes down with some glasses later today. So I don't have to look like I feel like I'm cool. I explained to everybody I met, people walking
cool.
down the street. I was like, I'm not doing this on purpose. I need you to know that.
You're just too self-conscious. This is New York City, dude. You can get away with anything here.
But I don't want to get away with anything, as I'm not trying to.
You walk around wearing a pink unicorn onesie.
I think I was going to say
that would be intentional.
Happy 4th of July.
It's like, you know what? I forgot to pack my regular clothes. I only brought my pink unicorn onesie.
Perfect.
So that's what I'm wearing tonight, too. Yeah.
So, get ready for anything.
Are you from up there in Rochester?
I'm from Buffalo.
Okay.
From Buffalo. I moved to Rochester. You know, same Canada, sort of. But Buffalo has a lot more TVs and sports, and that's what I don't like about it. So I moved to Rochester, which is a bit more tame and thoughtful, it seems.
Thoughtful, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think of you. I would think thoughtful when I think of you and the way you work. Talk to us a little bit about where your genesis was in the sort of craft cocktail scenario.
It was dives for a decade in Buffalo.
That's the beginning of everybody's
yeah,
story.
Yeah, but it isn't these days, right?
Like, well, you
like
know,
a
you're
lot of people
right.
are just like, I'm a dork, so I want to make cocktails, and they forget that they're making them for people. And that's, you know, that's definitely the opposite of where I came from. I was always making drinks for just people. And then I was sort of like watching my friends start to shake lemon juice into stuff. And I was like making fun of them for a year or two. And then somebody opened a bar in Rochester and they said, you want to come help out? And I was like, well, I just had a meltdown and quit my job. And now I'm trying to be a server. So yeah, I do want to do that because I'm a terrible server. Very bad at that. I don't like to go to the table. I like to be the table.
Mm-hmm.
You know, anybody else? Do you do that too?
Yeah. Well, it's...
I mean, we talked about this a little bit off air. I think everyone, I mean, everyone in my businesses is a bartender.
Yeah.
Right? Tonight you may have to be on the floor. Tonight you may be the host.
Right.
But you can bartend here.
Yeah. I served at Booker & Dax. You know, we all had to at some point. So you have to document the sunglasses, right?
This indeed. I just took a photo.
Prove to everyone listening that it is actually happening.
Yeah, it's real. Why don't you make up something like that? It just makes me look stupid.
Well, yeah, I like that model. I like it because it feels very egalitarian because, like, you know, I'm sure a lot of us have all come up through, like, you know, the system where the servers are the people who are, you know, less experienced. They're newer. Maybe sometimes they're like the C team. They're not as good. But, you know, you do that for a while. You get your sea legs. And then one day a bartender's too hungover and they call out. And the manager's like, all right, kid, you're coming up to the majors. Let's go. And that's how you become a bartender. But I like now that we're getting into a model where you can have a full restaurant stocked by people who give a shit and not just someone who's, you know, doing it for a paycheck while they are an underwear model on the side or something.
You can do it. Like it, yeah, exactly. You do it for a long time.
I mean, yeah, you can switch it and you can get those different, you can get people who do different aspects of service every single night. Right.
I mean, I love that. I totally love that sort of romanticized notion. But for me, it's business. It just comes down to the fact that I need, with labor costs increasing all the time, I need to trim the fat. And if every single person can do every single job and do it well, that's what I need.
Everybody has to be a Swiss Army knife.
Because if I have to have a host and a server and a barback and a bartender on any given night, but if I have, so that's four people, but if I have three people who can all do all those jobs, we can probably get through the night with just three of them.
Yeah,
for sure.
And I'll be happier because my labor's lower, and they'll be happier because the tip pool's thinner.
Yeah.
Everybody or has to thicker, know how to
depending
do
on how you want
to
look at it.
Yeah.
Truth.
Juicier.
Juicier.
Yeah, so I tried. I tried to, after, you know, 12 or however many years of bartending and just being the bar, I tried to be, like, without any knowledge of cocktails or food or anything, I tried to jump into it, like, a relatively fancy for Buffalo standards in the mid-2000s Italian joint that I was in over my head. I shouldn't have started there. I should have started somewhere that was more equivalent to the style of service I was accustomed to giving. And I think I just kind of flailed for 6 months and went, get me out of here. I want to go back behind a bar. And did that. And I, like I said, I had to serve at Booker and Dax because everybody had to do that all the time. Mm-hmm. And it was nice because the tables were as high as a bar. So I realized that it's not about, like, necessarily going to the table, like I just said.
So for you, it's just about table height.
It's just about the table height. Because I want to feel like that somehow when you approach a table, people are looking up at you, but they're looking down at you at the same time. It's what I felt when I was doing that. And at a table that you're looking eye to eye with people, it's just a lot more comfortable of an interaction, you know, for me. Yeah. So maybe if I ever open a restaurant that doesn't have a bar, everything's just going to be bar height.
See, yeah, I love that. I kind of do that at all my places, too. Bar height is the way to go. So you flailed a bit, and you backed away. You went back to just a dive bar?
No, I went to a cocktail bar. I think it was sort of trying to emulate EO at the time. It was called The Revelry. It was on University Ave in Rochester, and it was where it was like mostly free pour stuff. We would train in with jiggers, and we would like count. And it was thoughtful, but it was definitely a bit more of a cowboy bar than I'm accustomed to or now would prefer. And I worked at the Revelry for 1 year before moving to Booker and Dax, so I really didn't have that much cocktail experience. I was more bartender experience.
Right. And how did you then land the gig at Booker?
That was a total accident. I didn't know anything about the place. I'd never heard of Dave Arnold. I didn't know what was going on there. And Brenna, the woman I was dating at the time, was like, you should put in an application at one of these Momofuku restaurants because they're a large group and it seems like a really nice group of people. And this other place we went to called Fedora was something that I just liked being at. So I put an application in at Booker and Dax and at Fedora and then sort of weighed my odds. Like, do I want to have a job that, not to say that the money was bad at Booker and Dax, but do I want to have a job that is like consistently good money and a job title that I'm really familiar with? Or do I want to do something that I don't understand at all? And I chose to, you know, go stand in the basement as a 30-year-old guy. And you remember that basement. You can't even stand up straight in it.
Yeah.
I chose the more uncomfortable and more, I think, valuable for me path. And it changed the direction of my life completely.
Yeah.
The concept of fixing problems where problems, don't smoke everything because you have a smoker. Smoke something that needs to be smoked.
Sure. Just right? Because we can doesn't mean we should.
Completely. Yeah. And that was like Dave's and the whole crew's mantra. And I'm sure that was a collection of many people's ideas over time that just sort of landed in that space. But it just felt like a completely different world. It was a different planet. And then I moved back up to Rochester, worked at Good Luck for 6 months and decided, which is I work in a restaurant group that's like full of a bunch of very different but sort of related businesses. And I worked at the very big turn and burn one that's sort of like modern American food. Everybody goes there. Everyone who lives in Rochester has heard of that one place. And it just felt a little bit too large scale for me. I needed something more intimate. So I proposed that I move full time over to Cure, which is one bar station, 7 seats, 36 on the floor, French food. So a little bit more of a, I guess, anybody who ends up in the place didn't just walk by it. They like woke up and were like, where should I go? And for what reason? And that's how they ended up there. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's not like, I don't know, I walked by a Thai food restaurant earlier and I was like, I like Thai food. I'll go there. But if it was a French restaurant with a cocktail bar, it's kind of like the thing you have to look up first or hear about it from a friend. And I want to be that guy. Mm-hmm. So I like being in the little hidey hole that you had to find to get there.
What do you think is like kind of maybe the most important thing you took away from say, Booker and Dax? Like, be that a technique or even a recipe or just like an ethos. What do you think?
Balance.
Yeah.
Just balance, cocktail balance, looking at things in the way that, like every flavor, every booze or cocktail or food is on an X and Y axis to me now, where the Y axis is aggression and the X axis is time. And I guess there'd be a Z axis too of flavor, but everything moves through. When you take the first sip, It hits you at a level. Say it starts at a 5. I mean, let's talk about a daiquiri. It starts at a 5, and then, you know, that's the ethanol. And then the malic acid from the lime juice takes over, and it stays at a 5 for the rest of the drink until it, like, lightly trails off. Maybe there's some sort of finish on the 3-year barrel, whatever it is. Every drink should sort of be, like, a line, a straight line, or a very soft bell curve. And when you get into balancing a cocktail, I look at, probably because of Booker and Dax specifically, as just trying to straighten that line out. Whatever it is, it could be a 10, it could be a 1, but it has to be a straight line. Mm-hmm. The drink has to make sense, sort of, and, like, evolve over time. And if your first inclination is, wow, and then it just drops away, that's clearly not what you're going for, right?
Right.
And if it's the opposite, it's the same way. So I think just sort of, like, turning drinks and food into math was what came from that. Because I was already inclined to do things like that. I just didn't have the language or the direction. That's what I got. What'd you get from that place?
Man, I got what I got was the hell out of there.
Well, I mean, me.
No, me I had too, a blast. Clearly. I had a blast working there. You know, I was only there for about 9 months, but that was I was basically called upon to come and help kind of open the place and talk to people about, you know, talk to staff members about, you know, using those kind of tools, because I was a chef and I already had used a bunch of those tools, and it was easy translation for me to, and I used to be a teacher, so it was easy translation for me to come over and, like, help the initial team kind of learn to use some of those tools that Dave was bringing into a bar, you know, centrifuge, rotary evaporator,
first day,
sous vide, et cetera, you know, like
brutal.
Yeah. A lot of fun. A lot of R&D went into, you know, months of R&D went into before first day, you know right. what I mean?
Was there just, like, one day where you're like, all right, this is all the new technology that we're going to use for this? It's like, this is how, like, just an afternoon of, like, this is how you use a centrifuge, this is how you use a sous vide, this is how you use these electric red hot pokers.
No, yeah, that Dave built himself out of what looked at the first ones looked like they were just like
Mad Max.
They look like torture devices.
Thunderdome.
They look like repurposed curling irons or something. I don't know. They were. I still have one beating around my house somewhere.
You should find that.
Pull it out and show it off sometimes. Well, they have a shelf life. They can only burn for so long and then they die.
Right.
Which we knew going in.
In like a supernova explosion.
Yeah. 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 They give up gloriously. They give up their ghost. Yeah. What did I get from there though? I got a shitload of camaraderie and good times and good friends. And, you know, I learned to look at drinks kind of in a different way as well. You know, I think one of the greatest things that I think ever happened over there, happened kind of after me, is when I don't know who it was, maybe Nick Bennett, but acid adjusting orange juice to the same level as lime juice. What a game changer.
Or water. Yeah, that's a big one.
Yeah, what a game changer. You know, like making something acidic. You know, how many bartenders have the debate all the time? Drinks with orange juice are terrible. Yeah, they kind of are. They're flabby and sweet. But if you can acid adjust it to make it the same, you know, as a lime, then suddenly that blood and sand is a kind of an amazing drink, right? Makes you wonder if maybe oranges back then were already that way. Anyway, let's take a quick break and hear from our sponsors. We're going to come right back and keep talking to Donnie Clutterbuck about what he's got going on now, which includes an incredible app that you can get.
Ooh.
Well, if I could, I surely would. Standing on the rock where Moses stood. Pharaoh's harm I got drowned.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Ithaca. Located in New York's Finger Lakes region, Ithaca boasts an authentic craft beverage experience, tasty farm-to-table culinary adventures, and scenic outdoor recreation. As the saying goes, Ithaca is gorgeous. The city is home to 150 waterfalls and gorges sprinkled through its downtown and sloping hillsides. State parks and acres of natural lands offer outdoor recreation for every level of enthusiast. Come stroll among the cool ravines, scenic hiking trails, and natural vistas. Ithaca is home to Ivy League Cornell University and Ithaca College, resulting in an influx of new cultures, new tastes, and new energy every year. There's so much to explore, from art galleries and museums to unique attractions like the Cornell Lab of Ornithology. Ithaca sits at the heart of a blossoming heritage and craft cider industry. Some of these delicious ciders can be bought in market, but many of the most unique varieties can only be experienced with a visit to Ithaca and this great cider region. Go to visitithaca.com to get inspired and plan your trip today.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. My name is Michael Harlan Turkel, and I'm the host of The Food Scene here on HRN. This show explores the intersection of food, art, and design by talking to people who are inspired by these ideas. The show features food photographers, food stylists, interior designers, and so much more. All the players that make the world so visually delicious. You can find The Food Scene wherever you listen to podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
And we are back on the Speakeasy on Heritage Radio Network. Sitting in the studio today, of course, my de facto co-host, Greg Benson.
Hey.
And our, hey, buddy. And our very special guest, Donnie Clutterbuck from Rochester, New York.
Rochester.
Who's rocking his sunglasses in the daytime. Before we get back into all the things we were talking about, you, as many of our guests do, have brought us something, and it's sitting right here on the table, so I'm going to crack it open and pour it while you tell us all about it.
Please do. This is from a distillery called Alpine in Park City, Utah. And this product is not available for distribution. It's certainly not in New York State and probably not most of the rest of the country. I think it's available in Utah, though. We did a pairing dinner at Cure during the RCR, the Rochester Cocktail Revival, which is our one-week-long cocktail week. And we featured their vodka and gin and a whiskey and a liqueur that they make. And the products are really cool. And the distillery is really, I don't know, intentional and thoughtful. And they brought this extra bonus thing for the, you know, the Phantom Course number 5 that we just splashed everybody with a little bit at the end of it. And it really caught my attention as a product that is definitely in a category, but its own thing. You know how there's like, if somebody makes a new gin, it better be a different gin than every other gin. Otherwise, why'd you make it, right? Yeah. So I don't really know what goes into this. I know that they found some original recipe for chartreuse back in the, you know, somebody wrote something down and they were like, well, this looks cool. And they tried it out, and they distilled a whole bunch of things, either individually, like maceration, then distillation. And I think there's at least a post-distillation maceration of green tea in this, from my recollection anyway. I didn't get like a spec sheet on it again because it's not an orderable reality at the moment. But I think it's got a beautiful nose. It's 100 proof. It's medium sugar, so it doesn't feel like you're drinking jam. But the oil from the tea definitely makes it feel like you're drinking something a little bit more rich than the sugar otherwise would.
Yeah, it's nice. So. Just on the nose, I get this almost kind of like chicory bitterness to it.
Yeah.
Like there's kind of like an earthy, a friendly earthiness to it. Been told it's a very bright green, but I'll be in the dark about that. As will Souther.
Oh, shit, dude. I forgot to tell you.
You're not colorblind anymore?
Ravi bought me those damn glasses.
What? Do they work? Is it the most mind-blowing thing ever?
They didn't really do much.
Ah, shit.
Are you colorblind?
Yeah.
What colors?
Red-green.
Yeah.
Which is why you wear red glasses?
Accidentally.
Did you think they were green when you bought them?
No, I thought they were just brown or whatever. then they became my signature, so now I can't ever not wear them.
Yeah.
No, let's talk about that for just 2 seconds. I don't want to take away from Donnie's time. But, he had a few drinks. Robbie, my partner, Maury Margo. And he came down the stairs mid-service. Amazon Prime had delivered them. And he's like, try these on. I'm like, what are they? And he's like, just try them on. And I said, okay, man, it's dark in here. I'm working. These are sunglasses you're giving me or something. What am I? And he goes, no, they'll fix your colorblindness. And I was like, yeah, I don't see a whole lot of difference. However, it was dark. We were in the bar. So I waited till the end of the night, and I cranked the lights up, and I put them on. And I definitely could see some different things. But at the same time, and then I gave them to Sean, who's not colorblind, and I said, put these on. He goes, yeah, things look different. And I'm like, okay.
Wow. Yeah.
Okay, great.
And how do we measure that?
So how do we know for sure? However, you're red-green as well, yeah?
Yeah. Do you still have them at the bar?
I have them at home. So I should have thought of you. I thought Eric Jobs has been out traveling, but I know he's red-green, and Chaim Dauerman's red-green as well. So
we'll do it on the air.
Let's invite all those guys in and do it.
Yeah. Is this like the most dense population of red-green colorblind people?
One in 11 men.
Yeah.
It's
really?
Yeah. Many guys don't even know.
So that bottle and that clock number, they're both green and red. They're like kind of the same thing to you?
That's not brownish? Exactly the truth.
The way I usually describe it is like if you have a color wheel, picture it's a circle, right? So like you go around, red turns into yellow, turns into green, to blue, to purple, and back to red.
Right.
For us, it's kind of pinched in the middle where like the red and green kind of meet in the center. So like yellow and blue are still distinct,
right?
But as you kind of go around, it circles back to that center point.
Got it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I always say,
wow,
it's as if though I've learned your language, but I can't teach you mine.
Yeah. Yeah. I bet.
Right. I know what color shit is, but it's not correct.
Yeah, you don't see it.
I also know it's not correct.
The way that I see it.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay, that's enough of that.
Yeah,
but speaking of green, we're drinking this Ange Vert, which means the green angel.
Fairy or something like that.
Or something along those lines, sure. And it looks delicious. How's it taste? Who's had some already?
Mm. I've drank about 2 bottles of this myself over the course of time.
Yeah,
that's
this
nice.
Aroma is very herbaceous, and you're right, man. Even on the aroma, I'm getting tea.
Right.
Right? That matcha sort of green tea.
Did you take a sip yet?
Not yet.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not rushing, I'm all smells first.
Yeah.
Get in there, because it's 100 proof, right? I can also smell some heat.
A little spice, a little pine.
Right.
Almost some citrus on the end there, too.
Right.
Oh, and sharply bitter.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm a fan right away.
It's got a good tail. It's got a good body. Everything up front is like it's linear, I would say.
Check the old Instagram, people. There'll be a photo on there.
Yeah.
And cool I'll try stuff. And tag the maker.
Yeah. Alpine Distilling is their Instagram handle, I think. I'll give it to you if we can't find it.
I'll find it. Alpine Distilling from Park City. Ange Vert Liqueur. Hit them up on their Facebook or whatever.
Get it if you can.
Yeah.
Get them. Show them that there's interest, because this is delicious. This is certainly a bottle that would belong on the back bar of Maury Margo.
Which, like I said, is why I didn't bring 2 of them here. I meant to bring 2, but one of them is, you know,
that's the proof. That's the proof in the pudding, man. If one bottle didn't survive, you know, the second bottle's good.
That's like that's not even all. Like, I've had a few of them before. You know. Big fan.
Delicious stuff, and thanks for sharing it with us. So let's get back into you. You wrapped up your year-long excursion. You zip back home, and that's been 4 years ago, which blows me away.
Yeah, time is flying. I think time gets shorter as you get older. You know, like I have a theory on this. Can I go briefly into it?
Of course.
I know everybody has like
your show. Get into it.
But the more you
lean back and drink this,
the smaller of a percentage your previous the smaller of a percentage of your previous life each following moment is. Right.
Correct.
So when you're 1 year old, a day is 1/365th of your life. But when you're 10 years old, a day is like 1/3000-something-fifth. Right.
Sure.
So each moment becomes a smaller percentage of your previous experience. Therefore, you experience it differently. Or we just get busier and older, and we have to pay bills, and we pack our days more full, which is more likely why everything seems to go so.
I mean, surely it's a little bit of both.
Yeah.
And then when you get to, you know, I'm not by any means saying that I'm an old man. I'm not. But I also, you know, I realize that I'm past the halfway mark.
Are you?
I mean, yeah. I'm 49. I'll be 50 soon. I'm not going to live to be 100.
No.
It's easy living out on those Caribbean boats, man. You never know. Don't count your chickens, dude.
Wake up,
don't
catch a fish, before eat they for die. Lunch, drink some rum,
yeah.
Repeat.
It's not about longevity necessarily, right?
No, it's not.
I don't know if I'm
but it's about quality time.
Quality over quantity.
I might be at the halfway mark, too. Shit, I might get hit by a bus when I walk out of
here. We could. That's the thing. We could all be. I could look at a 10-year-old kid, and he could be at the halfway mark.
That's it.
But I'm for sure at the halfway mark. He may be. I definitely am. There's less than 49 ahead of me.
Yep.
Which is fine. I'm having a great time while I'm doing it. You have mentioned math more than once in conversations just today on the air. So I assume that's part of your life all the time, and that's what led you to go out on a limb and make an app.
Yeah. I
made an app. Do you know that?
I did. Yeah, I used it.
It tanked. It fucking went tits up.
I used it a bunch. It was the blue app that was called, I forget what it was
Batch.
Called. Yeah, Batch. That's right. It was like democratizing education.
It was a news and education app.
Yeah,
and
it was cool.
Fucking sank like a stone. Anyway, listen, failure is good for you.
Mine is sinking like a stone too, but people are using it, rather. I shouldn't say that. It's not like generating income. It's not paying itself off. But people are using it, and it doesn't cost a lot to operate it. So it doesn't need to go anywhere other than that, you know, $100 a year that it costs to keep it in the app store. And I can foot the bill on that. That doesn't matter. So until people stop using it, I'm going to keep it on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no way for you to ask for a dollar?
I mean, currently Bonal is the sponsor through House Alpens, and they did pay.
Oh.
But at the rate that they're paying, it would take something like 35 years to pay the app off. You know,
right.
Like, I'm not charging them a lot of money. I know that that's a company I really support, and I've talked to Eric Seed directly about it.
Sure.
If you want a whole lot of people to see this $17 bottle of delightful, you know, fortified wine, I would love to make that happen for you. So over the course of many convincing conversations, we got a 6-month contract out of them.
Outstanding.
Which is good, yeah. And eventually, you know, Tito, well, no, it doesn't have to be that brand or whatever. Someone will pay something for it. But I think it's such a niche group. It's not like I made a Spanish translated Bible where like billions of people will be looking at it. And then Candy Crush ads can just make me a billionaire, you know. This has to be very targeted. And it's a very targeted group that's looking at it. And it has to be a very targeted group that's displaying their logo on it. So just, I'm not a big enough fish for the people who have that checkbook to notice, And I don't know if I ever will be or if the app ever will be. And if it doesn't pay itself off, who gives a fuck? I don't care.
Ego project. You know?
Yeah.
All right.
Well, it's not even like making me a better. I want to make the world a better place. I want to be useful and functional. That's why I like working. I don't really like leisure.
Are those sunglasses rose colored?
I think they're actually green. And that's why you're saying that.
Either way, I wouldn't know. Well, okay. Well, tell us and the listener about the app, and they'll go download that thing right
poor
now.
Poor cost. If you're a bar manager,
poor cost. P-O-U-R.
P-O-U-R. Yeah, like you're pouring a drink. If you're a bar manager or even a brand rep, and you have to spend some time figuring out why the bottles in our country are in milliliters, and then we serve them in ounces, and then you have to do math to figure out what's going on with that, or keg sizes, how many ounces are in those. This just kind of does all that work for you. There are pre-programmed values in four sliders on the app. The top one is how big is the container. It could be a 750 milliliter bottle or a 24-pack of beer or a 50-liter keg or whatever. You just slide the slider to that thing. The next slider is a cost. The item's cost, so between $0 and $5,000, and it adjusts for your location. If you live in, like, Malaysia, it'll be between $0 and $5 billion, whatever it is. Yeah. You know, like, it's because the $5,000 is really not useful in, like, I don't know. The rupee or whatever.
Right.
So the second slider is the cost of the item. So you tell it how much that $750 cost you. And then the third slider is how much of it you're pouring. Whether it's a beer, it could be 10 ounces. If you're serving a 750 milliliter portion out of a 1.5 liter bottle or something, you can choose that. Or if it's just one can, like one thing, you know, there's an option for that too. And there's a pour cost slider at the bottom. And the pour cost is the cost of goods. So if your pour cost on a cocktail is 20%, and you charge $10 for that drink, it means the drink cost you $2 to make, just in case you're unfamiliar with the concept. So as you slide this bottom slider around, the math on the app automatically adjusts in real time constantly to tell you what it's costing you to do that and how much you might want to charge someone for you doing that. So there's just a whole lot of math you can do on paper or on a calculator, but why bother when it's an app? And when I was given responsibility of Cure, when I first moved up to Rochester, I didn't know how to use Google Sheets or Excel. I didn't have like a way to go about pricing things, and I didn't even know what the targets were. So I did a bunch of research, and I tried to find a college kid to make an app just for my phone so that I could have one. And I was like, well, if he can do it for $2,000, I'm sure someone who's smart and good at it can do it faster and better for $2,000. And if we're going to make it, we might as well make it for all phones. So this thing just snowballed into a project that's like cost me 25 times as much as I thought it was ever going to. But since I have a job, I make money, and I don't have kids or a family or like a Triumph TR6 that's always breaking down. I don't really have anywhere I need to be putting money. So my contribution to my community and the world at the moment is that. So I just put it out there. And if nobody ever pays for ad space again, it stays there and it continues to be useful. I like, there's a personal satisfaction I get from opening my phone and looking at the app. Even if I'm not using it.
No, it's I like, just, I like built, the graphic I built design. This from nothing. You know?
Yeah, and I didn't even code it. You know, it's not like I did it. I did it in so much as I had to work to make the money to pay the guy to do it. Capitalism, I guess. So it's not even like that I did it. It was just my idea, and it wouldn't exist without me. And that's my baby, you know?
Yeah. I don't know. Babies. I didn't build the Rochard with my bare hands. I don't know. I'm useless with a hammer and a saw, but, you know, I can still come in there and just be like, yes, I've brought life to this place, you know,
sure.
By being here until 4 a.m. doing fucking payroll last night. Now it gets to be open today.
And people get to get paid and come back
exactly.
Like their jobs.
Yeah. And guests get to come and enjoy your work.
Yeah.
But you know, at the same time, all those things that you just said, Greg, result in people making money, and you've done this thing that's not making you any money.
Yeah, it's true. But it's helping other people make money. So if bars are closing because people don't understand the concept of cost of goods, the world needs those bars, like the creative people who don't know anything about math, need a little assistance, and I can't be there.
Is there slider number four to include, labor cost?
No, it's not the labor cost app. I did try to make coffee cost and color cost for hair color and coffee, and it turns out that the app store is not really fond of copycat apps that look like each other. So if you have a Bills app and a Jets app and a whatever other football team app, they will now make you make a football app and then have like tabs for each of the teams.
Mm.
And I didn't want to confuse this by having it be like the cost suite because there's already a user base for poor cost. And if I like re-released another app that people paid for this over the course of time in the past, and I don't know, it was just getting really confusing. So I gave up the concept and labor cost. I don't know. Maybe once I'm get some money back for port cost. I'll work on that. You know?
Yeah, update your app, dude.
Yeah, once I did. We actually just did release an update like yesterday that allows for you to select where what country you're working in, which means that the product cost that used to be locked from $0 to $5,000 now is just infinitely variable based on real-time updates from like this currency exchange website that we tuned into, right? Also, the cost and the charge, like if you're working in the U.S. and somebody comes in with like a 500 Costa Rican money bill, whatever, I don't know what their peso is it?
You talk pretty.
You can, there's a charge list. It would say like in New York, if you were costing out this cocktail, it'd be 14 or 16 bucks or whatever. But if somebody came in with a foreign currency, you could tap that charge icon and it would bring up a list of all world currencies and how much they would have to pay you to equal that.
Right.
In whatever currency you choose.
The exchange.
So we updated that, and we put a whole bunch more, since there are a finite number of values, it's a finite space, it's not a computer. If it was a computer, we could do all this stuff. But since it's a phone-sized thing, the slider can only hit certain increments or a certain number of increments. So we almost doubled the number of values on all the sliders so that it's more usable, because otherwise you have to do a lot of rounding personally.
Right.
You still have to, but... we did just release a gigantic update, and I think it's my last one for a while.
Well, I don't think this thing sounds like it's supposed to be the end-all, be-all. No. It's a quick calculator.
It's a spot checker. You can also create cocktails, though, and cross cocktails out on it. Like, you could run a program on this if it was a small program. I could probably run Cure on it, but I'm too obsessive about doing inventory and what sort of numbers predictively we'll be hitting. So, I have crazy spreadsheets about that. But
yeah.
I only developed that neuroses by developing poor cost, though. If I didn't, like, peek behind the curtain a little bit, I don't think I would... care as much about
I was in Cleveland just yesterday and the day before and hanging out with those guys, and at some point I looked at the team that I was with and I just said, look, I'm all for having fun. I love having fun, but for me, making money is fun.
Yeah.
It's just a game. It's just a scoreboard.
You gotta do both. Yeah.
It's literally a scoreboard. Those are numbers. I want those numbers cranking up.
It's like pinball. Yeah. Except you get to do something with it afterward. It doesn't just disappear.
Right. So, yeah. Like, I'm looking at, you know, I look at every opportunity. When I'm over there, it's really, it's such a new world for me, because I assume maybe even, like, up in Rochester, like, it's...
cocktail prices.
Spaces real are estate just prices. So... Yes, exactly.
If there's anything we have, it's real estate.
And space is amazing. Like, these guys are like, oh, I want to show you this little bar. We went to this bar, and I was like, 7 of my bars will fit in here. That's not little. It's not even close to little.
Perspective. Everybody has a pickup truck up there, too. Like, it's nobody. No one's got a scooter that they ride to work. Nobody's
trucks and vans and, you know, SUVs everywhere.
As much spaces you can
pick
up.
Yeah, man. Big parking spaces everywhere. Like, doors that are wide enough to, you know, I don't know.
Actually walk through.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, well, that's the thing I was going to say. Doors are wide enough to drive through. Stefan Waz of the Porco Lounge pulls his van into the door of his bar, because it's wrapped, you know, it's painted on all.
How about that driveway, by the way?
Yeah, right.
You know, I see one. It's like a 20 degree.
Oh, to get up to his parking lot.
Yeah, you have to climb it. You have to like be a rock climber to get into that parking.
Yeah,
it's very steep.
And it's packed. It's packed every night. Yeah. They're killing it over there.
Yeah, math. You have to be less careful about math in terms of. I mean, you still have to be careful about everything in upstate New York or upstate wherever, you know, Ohio. I don't know whatever parts of Ohio those are. But the revenue is less. So, like, while you can shop around a little bit more for everything, you can't charge as much for everything because the expendable income or the real estate values or maybe whatever just isn't there.
Right, but your margin is higher because your
exactly
your costs of
math, right?
The cost of because of math, your margin is higher.
That's why I keep you
know. So yeah, it's frankly comparable. You know, all the bars over there in Cleveland specifically. I don't want to talk about all the whole country, but all the bars in Cleveland are charging. $12 to $14 for a cocktail.
Whoa.
Which is absolutely Brooklyn pricing.
Yeah, that's true.
Meanwhile, again, their rent is a fraction, right?
How are they getting that? We still do 10 a cure, which is like, you know, 40 years ago pricing, right?
I don't know.
We don't have air conditioning, though. That's probably why we're still at 10. If we installed an air conditioner, we could probably get 14.
10 in the summer, 14 in the winter.
Right.
Yeah. Math.
Math is great.
Yeah.
So you... You have no intention of monetizing the thing.
I mean, there's ad space on it. I'm sort of waiting. I did a lot of like footwork.
Do you have a pitch deck out there?
I sent it to a whole bunch of brands, and I constantly did this, but clearly that was not the road. Because
you know what's crazy?
I'm
about to kick the door open a little bit for you because going through similar things myself with trying to deal with brands who I think are like low hanging fruit and big juicy plums, right?
The person with the checkbook is not the person you're talking to.
Yeah, also
to talk to that person is really tough.
Also, they're not that easy. It doesn't matter. There's legal. There's all kinds of things.
They might spend $40,000 on a tent at a festival that six people will go into, but they're not going to spend $500 a month on like
your better
bar managers.
Your better targets are to go to things that all restaurants and bars use. Go to Ecolab,
Cocktail Kingdom, or something like
that. Go to Cocktail Kingdom. Go to Upserve. Go to Aloha. Go to those guys and say, hey. People might be more inclined to use all the things that are already built into your system if they can do some spot checking math while they're doing it.
Right.
And then those guys have budget dollars.
That's true.
Right. Or go to things that everyone uses at all.
If you work for one of these companies and you're listening right now,
call in.
I'll give you my phone number personally.
or even go to things that everyone in general needs. Like, so go to those guys and say specifically the people who are gonna get this app are in this business.
Right.
But you can also go to like, I don't know, Geico.
Yeah, you know what I mean.
Like, they do love advertising,
but do they really want bartenders specifically? You know, like this is going to be worth the most money to
people just want
who
an audience.
Bar managers in front of it. You know,
or just an audience.
Because there's only 2,500 people a month using this app
right now.
It's not 25 million. Well, you know, that's Geico number.
Right now it's 2,500. Soon it'll be 25,000.
How many bar managers are there?
It's just math.
Are there? It's math, baby.
I mean, there's what I don't even know how many bars are in New York City alone.
I wouldn't even.
I'm going to Google that.
I'm not
after
even going
to.
Yeah, exactly. How would you, there must be an estimate somewhere. There must be an exact number somewhere in some sort of file in
again,
the Chamber of Commerce.
Again, go see if Uber wants to put an ad on there.
Yeah, that's
everybody
a good idea.
Uses Uber, especially bartenders.
All right. I was sending it out to liquor brands. I was doing what I thought was the most
exactly that
thing,
makes sense, right? Yeah. But it's the legal.
What makes sense is not always what makes sense.
Well, I find that the ads from the liquor brands, it always comes down to like this looks good, this looks good, this looks good. Oh, legal killed it.
Right. Yeah, and then you emailed 1,000 times and
nothing for
happened,
nothing.
Right?
Yeah. Meanwhile, you can go to like.
I was hoping somebody will buy it at some point. You know,
well,
I did it. I
you
get
know
to
how
look at
so
it.
That's the thing. You know how you get it out there into more people's hands? You get advertising on there. You know how you get advertising on there? Having more people in it, right? Yeah, and then once you do one or both of those things, then someone wants to buy it.
How do you get a restaurant job? If you have a restaurant job.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
You want to make $2 million opening up a bar? Start with $4 million.
Yeah, I'm super obsessive. I move from one thing to another. I dive as deep down every hole as I possibly can, and then I'm like, all right, that was the bottom as far as I can. I don't have the mole claws to get any further down. I'm going to move on to another thing. At this point, I've just moved on to another thing, and I'm waiting to see if something's going to happen. And I'm like building a low-temperature glycol circulator for carbonated drinks. That's what I'm doing this week, you know? It's one thing at a time. So something I didn't say earlier, the reason I'm so obsessive and I guess math focused. So I hit my head on the ground when I was a kid and I forgot my whole life at 16 years of age, that is. And the part of your brain that it has like a shelf, like a sharp shelf under your eyeballs, right? Do you know, have you ever seen the inside of a cranium before?
It's like, what is it? The occipital lobe?
Yeah,
is that what it's called?
Right, it's by the temporal lobe where that is sort of. But when you smush your brain up against the front of your cranium, there's like a little sharpie piece underneath your eyeballs and that pokes right into your temporal lobes. And I don't know if this is related or not, but I got some brain scans many, many years later that show blood flow, and I don't have any blood flow to my temporal lobes. And so the doctor who was showing me this was like,
so your brain dead is
what you can. Yeah, completely. it was unbelievable that I could hear or see or speak, I guess, or something like that. I don't remember the exact quote. He's like, I don't know how you made it through high school or whatever, but I know that I've lost a couple of human traits along the way. I don't like sports. I don't develop personal bonds personally. I feel things only through other people. And I'm inclined to obsess over everything until it's unobsessible anymore. So that's kind of the reason that I do all this stuff, and then I just kind of like give it up, you know?
I think that's kind of a trait that a lot of people in this industry have. I think
probably
that's how, you know, I mean, how do you, you know, no one started off by, you know, going into the industry. It's like, you know what I really want to do? I really want to research the perfect temperature at which to carbonate genipene. Like, no, it's like you just go down these rabbit holes and you get further and further and further until eventually you're in this, you know, graduate level minutia that really no sane human being will ever need to know, but someone's discovered it and people keep going further.
As I was getting these brain scans, everybody was always like, did you want to be a bartender your whole life? And I was like, I didn't want to be anything. I just kept on like being inclined to do something and then continued to do the things I really liked doing. And with this lack of blood flow to whatever part of my brain is like responsible for sorting sounds, I don't really have like a focal point for sound. So being in public in bright places that are noisy from a 360 degree, you know, spread is really like physically painful and confusing for me. Like going to a farmer's market or something where everybody's loud and it's bright drives me bananas and I have like physical pain from it. So where do you always know it's going to be a little bit dark and behind you is not talking? It's a bar. Bottles don't talk, right?
Sure.
So I didn't know that I was doing this because it's the only place I'm kind of comfortable, and that's probably why I became a bit of a workaholic, because I feel the best at work. Hmm. Yeah, weird, right?
Everything's weird, dude.
Yeah, every person's weird. That's me.
We, you know, yeah. Well, we're getting
probably to the sidetrack there.
No, this is your show, buddy. So we're getting to the end of this episode. If you wanted people to get in touch with you and they wanted to get in touch with you, how could they do so?
My email address is itsme@donnyclutterbuck.com. It's ITSME at donnyclutterbuck, donnyclutterbuck.com. Wow. That's the best website I could come up with. Sorry about that.
And you got social, and you got social media.
Yeah, social media at Donnie Clutterbuck, DonnyClutterbuck.
Kind of across all things. Yeah. And Pourcost, PourCost, can be found in the App Store.
Pourcost is in the App Store, and there's an Instagram account for that that's a little bit less used called Pourcost App on Instagram.
Awesome.
You have my phone number if you email me.
Yeah, Pourcost. So everybody listening, just go download that thing right now, and then you'll have more users, and then you get a chance to get more ads, and then we can build the thing bigger and sell the thing off.
That's right. And I'll share the money.
You'll be a millionaire.
Yeah, you get like a finder's fee if you sell it for me. I don't know what it is yet. We'll talk about that. Can I say one more 32-second thing?
Whatever,
21-second thing.
We got time.
Yeah. So I drove that car down that I was selling, and I don't know if I said this on our air actually. Did I?
I don't know.
I drove a car down that I was selling. And the reason I'm wearing sunglasses is because my glasses are in the car. Right? We talked about that. So now I don't have a way to get back up. So I was like, do I take a train? No, I would like to get home at some point. So I'm not going to do that. So I'm taking the train up to Croton Harmon Station, renting an Enterprise van, driving halfway to Albany, and picking up a full-size Police Trainer arcade game. Do you remember that game?
Yeah.
For my apartment.
What?
This is one of the most exciting. It's a birthday gift to myself.
Because today's your birthday, by the way. We didn't mention that on air. Happy birthday.
35 years on. I don't really celebrate my own birthday, but if there's any way to do it, it's buying a full-size arcade game for your 35-year-old self.
Hell yeah.
So that's a hell of a celebration.
13-year-old's apartment.
Tag us in a photo of that
certainly.
So we can see it.
You got it.
And then we'll come up and play it, too.
I just had to say that because I was really jazzed about
it. Way overdue for visiting. I think I remember the last time I was up there.
I'll come up for the next year's... I don't know, some RCR stuff.
Yeah, RCR.
Or maybe a six-month spread. We'll do like a November thing.
Man.
If you'd like.
I would. I'd like to be everywhere all the time, you know, omnipresent. But I can only be in one place at a time currently.
Yep.
Working on the math. Well, that's it for this week's Speakeasy. Thanks for tuning in. And really, Donnie, what a great time having you on.
It's been a blast. Thank you.
Yeah, buddy. Cheers, guys.
Appreciate it, y'all.
Cheers.
With your rock and roll load, knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues that send. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Want more of the Speakeasy? Follow us and ask questions on Instagram at Speakeasy Podcast or on Twitter at Speakeasy Radio. You can find Damon at Damon Bolte, and you can find me at Creative Drunk on all platforms. Take a moment to write us a review on Apple Podcasts or your favorite platform and give us a star rating, 5 if possible. If you're visiting New York City or a resident, stop by the studio and hang out with us during an episode. Reach out beforehand to make sure we'll be here. We'd love to see you. And please support our show by visiting heritageradionetwork.org and clicking on the beating heart to donate.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org, or connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like. Tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage, and thanks for listening.